There's a cup of water sitting next to each one of your desks. I want you to pick up the cup of water and I want you to throw it on the person next to you. That'll wake them right up. That'll be a drink offering, all right. It won't be promoting fellowship, but it will keep them awake. So, now, this particular peace offering here in verse 12, where you have this meal offering offered along with it, we don't really know why it's being offered. Some say that it may be a thanksgiving. See, it's more of a thanksgiving. That's what it says, sacrifice of thanksgiving. But it's a peace offering. And so some say, well, it may be a thanksgiving offering probably made to express thanks for unexpected deliverance or for blessing that had already been granted. But those are just really possibilities. We don't know exactly why it's being offered or the real underlying reasons here. We're not given full explanations. That's just a possibility. And I think they're pretty good possibilities. They're things that are applicable where we're God does want us to thank Him when He brings about unexpected deliverances. And He also wants us to thank Him for blessings that have already been granted. He definitely does want that. Verse 13, he says, besides the cakes, he shall offer for his offering leavened bread with the sacrifice of thanksgiving of his peace, of his peace offerings. Now, this is kind of different because he's to offer leavened bread, not unleavened bread, but leavened bread. And I think that what this represents is that it represents the offerer as to how he really is experientially before God. Mm-hmm. That is, he is not perfect in himself. His perfection is through the blood of Christ. Through the blood of Christ, he's fully reconciled to God on a legal basis. But he's not perfect. And so he offers leavened bread to show where he really is before God. He still has leaven. Now, what is significant about that, to my mind, is that here we are shown for what we really are in ourselves. That is, there's still sin working in us. Romans 7 still applies to one and all. What I want to do, I don't do. What I don't want to do, I do. We still find that happening. And we're finding that the flesh is working very strongly to down the Spirit and is at times quite successful. And then we find the Spirit is working to down the flesh and we find that the Spirit is at times quite successful. But it's not that we're just doing everything perfectly, full surrender, no hitches, no problems, no hindrances. It's just not quite that way. There's still leaven. But the point is, we can still have fellowship. We can still have communion. We can still offer thanks to God and He accepts it. Now that's a big thing. It's a simple point, but it's a big point. And it's something that we really need to be able to hold on to. Because there's times we don't feel all that accepted by God because we've stumbled here, we have this problem, this difficulty. That's the leavened bread. That's the leaven. And that's where we all are from time to time. Having certain difficulties, making certain mistakes. But we can still offer thanks to God because of the shed blood, and we're still accepted by God. And we can still have communion with God. And that isn't ignoring our sin or pretending that we didn't sin. It's only going to be possible through really acknowledging our sin, repenting of our sin, asking Him to forgive us. And He's right there to do that. That's what He wants to do. So the worshiper is presented with a vivid reminder as to the fact that God knows that there's still leaven in his life. God's not fooled. God isn't just outside. Seems to be similarities between the two. But it's more, the idea here is that they would hold this up as a present, as a tribute to God. And that's what was being acknowledged. When he says, one was for a heave offering, we just read here in verse 14, the word one speaks of one of the cakes out of the number of each kind presented in verse 12. So that goes back to verse 12, where it says, unleavened cakes mingled with oil, unleavened wafers anointed with oil, cakes mingled with oil of fine flour fried. They took one of these and made it as a heave offering, one of these cakes. It's in this context, and he mentions, see then verse 13 mentions that there's one that's leavened, and perhaps he also took one from the leavened bread. He might have taken one out of the number mentioned in verse 12, and perhaps he took one from the leavened bread. He may have taken one from each, and as it were, presented them to God as a tribute to God. It seems like in both a heave offering and a wave offering, it was lifted over the person's head, and then some sort of acknowledgement was really made to Yahweh, where it was a real clear offering made to Him, to God. And it says it was done before the altar. So it was lifted up. It's talking about the heave offering. There may have been motion along with it from side to side, and it was done before the altar. But it wasn't placed upon the altar. It was then given to the priest. And you can note Exodus chapter 29, verses 24 and 28. Exodus 29, verses 24 and 28. This is done as an acknowledgement before God. It's an acknowledgement to Him. And with that, you can also note Psalm chapter 139, verses 23 and 24. And see, it can be applied to this leavened bread as well, where it's not that we're presenting the leaven to God, but we're acknowledging it. We're acknowledging who we really are. We're not pretending to be this, when we know experientially we're still this. He doesn't want us playing games, pretending to be something we're not. So now some might say, well, no, you couldn't hold up the leavened cake before Yahweh. Well, that means we can't hold ourselves up before Yahweh. It'd be like saying we can't present ourselves. Now I'm not saying present ourselves without Christ's blood washing us. We need Christ's blood washing us, and we need the Word of God changing us, being transformed by the renewing of our minds, but we're to offer ourselves before God. And as to who we are, we still have leaven. And I'm presenting myself to God. And if I can't present myself to God as to who I am, meaning that I'm opening up to Him so that He can keep working in my life, I don't know how He's going to work in my life. I'd have to pretend that I'm something that I'm not. I'd have to pretend that I'm without leaven when I know experientially I still have leaven. God isn't into games here. He wants us to be able to admit, acknowledge, be honest, be open. And some might dispute that. And we don't know exactly. I think the safest thing to conclude is that he took a cake from those of verse 12, and then he may have taken one of leavened bread as well. I think definitely from those of verse 12, perhaps one from verse 13. But that's only a possibility. Now he says in verse 15, "And the flesh of the sacrifice of his peace offerings for thanksgiving shall be eaten the same day that it is offered. He shall not leave any of it until the morning." Now see, this is where I mentioned that all the rest of the family is involved, because he's bringing this animal, and they're not offering really any of the meat of the animal. That means there's a lot of meat. If you're talking about an ox or a large ram, you're talking about a lot of meat. If the offerer is the only one that is supposed to eat this, you're going to have one gluttonous individual by the time this day is over. He's not supposed to leave any of it. Well, yeah, as the offering. But see, now here with the peace offering, all that we have given is the fat of the animal and the two kidneys, the caul of the liver, and the rest is left for him to eat, basically. And see, with the burnt offering, that was entirely different. But here with the peace offering, he's going to end up eating this animal. And that's why, and the priest help him, but that's why it's also the rest of his family. And his servants, they're also part of the whole group that partakes of this. He needs some help eating this animal. Yeah, he's going to be real glad.
Is this a case like the burnt offering where you say that you do it, but you don't necessarily, in practicality, have to do it?
I think that they had to. The way that it is stated here, where he says, and it's stated very, very much to the point that they're not to leave any of it. I think that's exactly what they had to do. I think they had to eat this whole animal. Now, maybe when it came right down to it, I think what the case really is, it ended up being open to enough people so that you could end up, in effect, it's like a huge fellowship meal is more what it ends up being. And so you can make it available to enough people that I don't think there's any problem in eating the whole animal, you know, whatever that actually amounts to. So, but I think they had to eat the whole thing. They may have been able to do something like that. I don't really know. It's a possibility, I suppose, but I don't really know. If they did, I'm even more glad that I'm in the new covenant.
What's happened with these, back in verse 13, what's happened with these cakes after they've been offered up?
You tell me. Oh, except this is verse 13. We don't know exactly what they did. After they made certain of these offerings, we don't know what they did.
I was wondering about the offering of these 11 things. They wouldn't turn around and eat these 11 things, I wouldn't think.
No.
Okay.
Maybe they liked Wonder Bread. We've eaten a lot of it. Now, I don't know. I don't know what they exactly did. All we're told is that they made this particular offering. And somehow it's part of in this case, like verse 13, when it says his offering leavened bread with the sacrifice of this thanksgiving of his peace offering, they may have put that on the altar. They may have burned that up along with the fat and the kidneys. That's what they may have done. I think that's a good possibility. As I said, these different things beg a lot of questions. good questions. We just lack good answers with some of it. So now, as far as them eating all of this, we just read there in verse 15, this is the same as it was with the Passover and also with the manna. Exodus chapter 12, verse 10, and also Exodus chapter 16, verse 19. 12, 10, 16, 19. The offerer ate the flesh of this thanksgiving peace offering before morning came again. He ate it before the next day. And his household was able to help him out. As we thank God and honor Him with the very best, that is with the fat, the choicest part, we then find ourselves in a place of peace and communion, wherein He sustains us, He satisfies us, and He blesses us abundantly. See, this is what the point is. You take this animal, which is, and you're going to use the choicest parts, as far as what God is labeling as the choicest parts. Now, see, we wouldn't label it as the choicest part, as far as what we'd want to eat, what we'd want to partake of. You know, fry me up, you know, frying pan of that fat. Boy, I just can't wait. boy. Yummy in my tummy. No, it doesn't. I don't know how you feel about it. You know, maybe you have different eating habits than I do. I don't want to make any of you feel bad. So, if I offend anybody, it's purely unintentional. I don't want any hate mail, no firebombing my truck, whatever. He said he wants the fat. That's the choicest part. And then he says, I want you to eat the animal. Boy, what a good deal. He said, you want the animal and you eat the fat. Well, can we work out a deal here? Can we take this to arbitration or hire a lawyer or something? So you have this animal and you make this offering, and look at what you get out of the offering. You get that which sustains. It sustains them physically. It satisfies them. It's fulfilling. It blesses them. You get this whole meal. Now, of course, they bring the animal. So, I mean, it's at their expense. But the whole picture shows, if you give the best parts to God, this is what He's able to do. He's not stingy. He doesn't say, give me the best parts and I can't eat for 6 weeks. You know, a 6 week fast. Or I want you to live in this hole over here in the ground. See, God wants to bless. This is where people get tripped up on the blessing packs. Because they do see that it's God's will to bless. It isn't God's will to curse man. He wants to bless man. He wants man to really be satisfied. But they don't see that there's more to the plan of God than just blessing. And there's also a price to receive the blessing. It doesn't just come automatic because Christ died on the cross. And it doesn't mean now all trials are erased, all suffering, all affliction, all persecution. See, they have a truth, but they don't have the whole picture. They're not totally out of the ballpark. They've got scriptures that back them up. And what the scriptures are saying and what they are saying the scripture says is true. But they just don't have the whole picture. They don't have a totally false Roman Catholic, Jehovah's Witness, Mormon doctrine. They've got scriptures that support it. But they don't have the full picture and concept as to what it will cost and how you really arrive at having the blessing of God. That's where they miss the mark.
Yes.
And their heart is basically right before God. And they're basically viewing God in the right way. He's not an ogre. He's not a tyrant. He's not stingy. The cattle on a thousand hills belongs to Him. See, they see that. So they're giving God credit to be a good God. They don't have Him as some austere, mean guy with a huge sledgehammer across His line and crash. There's another smashed foot. And we end up hobbling around in casts and crutches and in wheelchairs because we keep crossing these lines, and God is so mean, so cantankerous, He's just out to smash us. See, They see a certain aspect of God, but then it's taken into a ditch, into an excess. And then it takes certain portions of the Bible and says it's no longer applicable. And what it really does is, with the example of Christ, it pushes so many things about Christ being an example and just says that isn't for us. That doesn't apply to us. But it does apply to us. There's an interesting connection here, and you give the very best and look at what He does. Look at what He makes available to us. We must take this in fully each day. See, the point is, give Him the very best each day, and He will sustain. He will satisfy. He will bless abundantly. But there's a price. Give Him the best. And we're not going to turn around tomorrow and start just automatically giving Him the best. It's going to take time. He's going to show us what the best really is. He's going to identify more and more what the choicest parts of our life are really to Him. And He's going to teach us about it. And He's going to show us how to offer it. So He's going to teach us all these things. And then out of it, we're going to find the blessing of God in our lives in new ways, in deeper ways. See, tomorrow we need another full amount of God's sustenance. We need another full amount of God blessing us and moving in our lives. Yesterday won't be enough for today. And today won't be enough for tomorrow. And so that's why they had to eat the whole thing that day. And they weren't making this offering every day. They weren't doing this every day. This was more on a volunteer basis. And see, that's the reason why, when I mentioned in verse 12, you know, what is the basis of making this offering? Probably for an unexpected deliverance or a blessing that they'd received from God. Now they wanted to offer thanks to God. And see, that would further add to this picture that involves God moving to touch them, to bless them. They thank God, and God just adds to the blessing. He just wants to keep adding to the blessing. It shows how much God is really for us. And it shows that He wants to do good things in our lives on a continual basis. Verse 16, but if the sacrifice of His offering be a vow or a voluntary offering, it shall be eaten the same day that He offer His sacrifice, and on the morrow also the remainder of it shall be eaten. So this is a little bit different. And you can tie verse 16 with verse 17 where He says, but the remainder of the flesh of the sacrifice on the third day shall be burnt with fire. So in this one you could continue eating it for 2 days, but then on the third it was to be burned up. Now, a vow, if it's a thanksgiving peace offering that is a vow, and you also will find the word votive, V-O-T-I-V-E. So it's either a vow or votive offering. And then the other is a voluntary, and you'll find that described as a free will offering. So vow and votive speak of the same thing, and then voluntary and free will speaks of the same thing. And it's continuing to talk about a thanksgiving peace offering. And if it's a vow, then this. If it's voluntary, then this. You can see it gets kind of complicated. Talking about the vow here for a moment. And I'll tell you what it seems to be. It seems to be a peace offering made for blessing or deliverance already granted. So it's essentially the same thing that I mentioned from verse 12. It really is just the same thing. Made for blessing or deliverance already granted. This is where a person made a vow to offer based on what God has done. God has done something, and the person made a vow to offer based on that. And we're clearly into speculation. We are clearly in the realm of possibilities. We're in the realm of, we don't know what we're really talking about. It's the realm that we're in. Because, I mean, what is this thing really? It's just very difficult to know. And you can do all the more reading you want. There's all sorts of books on the offerings, but you find out that a lot of it still just boils down to speculation, guesswork. This person has obligated himself to offer. God has blessed him, and that's motivated him to say, I'm going to make this offering. Can you relate to that? Mm-hmm. That's happened to us. Have you found the next day that you took back the vow? Has that ever happened? God touches you in a certain way, blesses you in a certain manner. We make a certain vow based on what He's done. And then the enemy shows up, kind of puts a roadblock in the way there. This is where God says, I want you to pay your vows. And sometimes it's based on what He's already done. And then you make a commitment based on that. Well, a person's got to live out that commitment. And you'd think it would be easy to live that out. Look at what He did. And it just brought right out of your heart this, I want to make this commitment. I want to make this kind of offering to God. I want to more fully surrender my life. And He did this. And so it's easy to make that commitment in words. But the enemy's going to be there. Maybe not in every case. It'll depend on how deep the vow has been made and how seriously it has been made. But generally, sooner or later, the enemy will be there to contest it. And the Lord wants to be there to provide the strength so that this can be offered. And it is sprung from God's blessing, but that doesn't mean that it will necessarily be a real easy thing to offer to God. It helps, and God wants to be there to give further assistance, but it can still have some roadblocks in the way. Now, the voluntary offering, so you've got vow, and then you have voluntary. This seems to be a peace offering to express general thankfulness and love to God. It's just out of one's free will, without regard to any particular or specific blessing. The vow seems to be connected to a particular thing that God has done. And see, there's examples of that in the Scriptures where people would say, if God will do this, then I vow to do this. Mm-hmm. So there'd be a connection between God doing something and then that individual doing something. Whereas voluntary is just out of that person's free will, and it's not connected with any particular or specific blessing. And so that's very possibly the way to categorize these. Now, he said that they had to eat it within 2 days and then destroy the remainder of it on the third day. And if a person ate part of this offering on the third day, verse 18 tells us that that person would bear his own iniquity. So they weren't to keep this for a third day and eat it. If there was still some left over on the third day, then they were to burn it up. And if they ate it on the third day, they would bear their own iniquity. That is, they were sinning before God. God is continually placing us in situations where we must obey Him. And they are tests. There would be real strong temptations from time to time to eat this meat on the third day. It wouldn't be necessarily something that an individual would feel real comfortable with, thinking, well, we have this meat, and they weren't really a meat-eating people, and so that's kind of an extra blessing in and of itself. And there may have been quite a bit left over sometimes when you come to the third day, and it could be rather tempting to just think, well, it doesn't really matter that much. But they were to burn it up. They were to place it upon the altar. And there's situations in life where He wants us to obey. And Now, the exact reasons for this, we don't know. Now, I think very possibly, just, you know, and this may not be the case at all, but God knows what happens to meat that's been cooked, and then you go 1 day, 2 days, 3 days, and they didn't have refrigeration, and salt isn't, you know, the greatest preservative to keep, you know, all bacteria away and to keep all disease from setting in to that meat. And it may have just been that God was concerned for their health. And, you know, that may have been just the underlying reason to the whole thing. And he's just saying on the third day, there are possibilities of food poisoning. There's possibilities of sickness. You know, that's not unreasonable. That's really quite likely. He's doing it for them. See, he wasn't trying to take blessing away from them. See, you know how you can end up with these fears that somehow God he only wants to bless so far, and then he wants to take the blessing away and just kind of make life miserable? You ever had fears like that? It's kind of maybe subconscious or sometimes just kind of tormenting. That somehow God is out to just put us under his thumb and put us on the rack, and he wants to do good, but it's going to be in a real hard way, and it's going to be all these difficulties, and if it's been good for quite a while, you know what's around the corner. Some horrible test, some awful trial, you know, it's just been too good for too long. Well, you know who's showing up, don't you?
Yeah.
See, demonic spirits. Now, there are going to be tests. They are going to show up. But he said, pray, lead us not into temptation. He shows his will isn't to put us through just loads of tests, to make life harsh, take away blessing, make it difficult. You know, what he does, there's a real purpose to it. He knows what he has to accomplish. And I don't think that he really enjoys putting us through these things. As a parent, there are things that I require of my children that I really don't like doing it. I don't enjoy it. I don't really like having to harp on certain things. I don't just get a big smile and, oh boy, I get to tell them to do this. And then I get to make them do this. And, oh, this is so much fun. You know, they've just been having, it's just been too easy for them. Had a good meal and dessert, and then they had this fun playtime, and you know, it's just time to make things hard again for them. I don't want them to think that life is easy and that dad's really, you know, for them. It's just, I got to make it kind of hard on them. And so now I'm going to force them to do this. See, it's not something I take delight in having to train them to do certain things or require certain things of them. But I know what's best for them in the long run.
Yes.
And they don't always understand that I'm thinking that way. I don't know how they view it sometimes. But I don't think it's... Sometimes I've asked them, now, are you mad at me? Are you upset at me? You know, do you know why I'm doing this? I don't want them mad at me. I don't like my children mad at me. I don't like them upset at me. Well, I don't think God is trying to do things to promote us being mad at him. And the enemy, though, comes along. And he's not saying, now, on the third day, you get all this meat, and I know it would be a blessing for you to eat it, but I'm going to put you through this kind of hard test just for the sake of testing you. That is not the way in which God tests us. But it's just time for another test. You know, I just need to see how you're going to do, and I don't really have any purpose in this, but it's just time for another test. See, he's not unreasonable. He's not this kind of being that just out of nowhere he does things by whim. He just kind of feels like doing this today. There's always purpose. There's always reason. It's always logical. It always makes sense. It may not always make sense to us because we don't have a divine perspective on all of it.
Right.
But from his perspective, it makes perfect sense. It's what's needed. And he's not trying to show here, yeah, as part of testing, I'm going to take blessing away just to see what you'll do. I don't think that's what his point is. I don't think that's what he's doing. I think he was doing it to protect them. And whether or not that's the case, I can't really prove it. But to me, that's reasonable. That puts God in the light that he should be in. And I think that's a better way of viewing it than just saying, well, you know, he's putting him, he does put us in situations where we have to obey. But there's reasons that are valid, that make sense. They're not illogical. God's not unreasonable. Our difficulty is that we're not always able to see it from His perspective. But if in time, as He's able to communicate His perspective, we don't dispute Him. We say, that makes sense. I wish I would have been more open 2 months ago, and I wouldn't have been in this trial more or less blaming you, but now I can finally see it, and that is reasonable. It does make sense. That's the way God is. So, I mean, I just offer that as a possibility here. I don't know exactly why He said they couldn't eat on the third day. It may just be for health reasons, but I don't really know. I think that's a good possibility. Now, verse 20, He says, but the soul that eateth of the flesh of the sacrifice of the peace offerings that pertain unto the Lord, having his uncleanness upon him, even that soul should be cut off from his people. Now, we don't know where this uncleanness came from. Verse 21 says, moreover, the soul that shall touch any unclean thing, as the uncleanness of a man, or any unclean beast, or any abominable unclean thing, and either the flesh of the sacrifice of the peace offerings which pertain unto the Lord, even that soul shall be cut off from his people. This shows that, and I would say primarily, verse 21 explains where the uncleanness has come from. But I think uncleanness could come from other things besides just these. In some manner, ceremonially, or because of iniquity, disobedience, or whatever, this man is unclean. What does that mean? He's not in a right state before God. And now he's going to partake of this peace offering, which says that you're in communion with God and in proper fellowship with God and at peace with God. He's going to partake of that as though he's clean. He's going to partake of that as though everything is fine. But everything isn't fine. See, it's the exact same picture of communion. Exact same picture. You can note 1 Corinthians chapter 5, verses 1 to 8, also chapter 11, verses 26 to 31. 1 Corinthians 5, 1 to 8, chapter 11, verses 26 to 31. The person, because of sin, because of uncleanness, is in effect cut off from the covenant. Therefore, cut off from God. Therefore, cut off from peace, fellowship, and communion. He's showing it's a serious matter. A person has to be in a right place to partake of these things. He's asking and requiring that we be honest and face these things with a proper soberness. Now, verses 22 to 27 talk about the blood and the fat being God's alone, which we already talked about. The blood and the fat are God's alone. Now, from verses 29 to 34, he gives some more information concerning the peace offering. And he says, speaking of the children of Israel, saying, this is verse 29, he that offers the sacrifice of his peace offerings unto the Lord shall bring his oblation unto the Lord of the sacrifice of his peace offerings. His own hands shall bring the offerings of the Lord made by fire. The fat with the breast, it shall he bring, that the breast may be waved for a wave offering before the Lord. Now this introduces another facet to the peace offering. He is to take the breast of the animal and he is to wave that. Then what he does after that is that the fat is burned upon the altar, verse 31, but the breast shall be Aaron's and his sons. He gives the breast after he's waved it, and that's the idea, it's actual waving, acknowledging God, waving this before God, and then he gives that to Aaron and his sons. It's emphasizing that this is God's, giving this breast to God's. The breast speaks of the bosom. The bosom speaks of intimacy. John laid his head on Christ's bosom. It may also denote the heart because of its close proximity to the heart. It's given to God, it's waved, and then it's given to the priest. It can very possibly show a heartfelt thanks for God's ministers. It's the breath, it's waved before God and then given to the priest. Could be talking about a heartfelt thanks. And because it ends up given to the priest, it could be showing a heartfelt thanks for God's ministers. Showing appreciation and thanksgiving. A proper honor. It also shows the heart given to God through the ministry of the saints. Through the ministry of the priests. Through the ministers of God. We're able to give our heart to God. We're able to enter an intimacy with God because of the priests. They have these offerings, but every offering involved the priests. The priests all had a role, different roles in the offerings. The people didn't just come.